Jope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Jope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550. Gonna be there in an
hour, coming in the band. At the moment, I am down a George Foreman rabbit hole. Ever been down one of those? The George Foreman rabbit hole? It's a pretty fun Wikipedia page, George Foreman.
Well, he's had a few different lives. Yeah.
Today is 50 years since Rumble in the Jungle.
I did see that on the social media machines earlier today.
Yes. I wanted to know how he was doing. By that I mean,
yeah,
if he was doing. Like, I wanted to know what George... It's not going to tell me what he's doing right now, but Wikipedia tells you 75.
Honk your horn right now if you are terrified that Mike is about to tell all of us that George Foreman has a boxing match the weekend after Thanksgiving.
He's fighting tonight. In Batavia. No. He did fight in Rochester once. One of many interesting things to me, perhaps only, about George Foreman's life. He fought in Rochester in 1989. At the War Memorial against Mark Young, who maybe was younger than George Foreman. But Foreman won. He was 70... Just wrote it down. 75 and 6? 76 and 5. 76 and 5 for his career.
1989 is sort of in between. Like, is that the end of the first?
No, that's the comeback.
That's the comeback. That's okay.
Yeah, that's
because that went on a while then. Because I feel like I know I was living back here for a long period of time while he was active fighting, and I didn't know that started as soon as 89.
So 87 is when he came back from a 10-year hiatus from boxing. He was 38 years old. And he got all the way to become the oldest heavyweight champion in history, beating Michael Moore. Were you interested in that when that happened?
I was, yes, but my dad's a big boxing fan. So, and when he was, I'm just trying to piece together the timeline, when I moved back from Connecticut, obviously George Foreman, well, not obviously to me, obviously his career had already restarted because I moved back in the winter of 91, I think, shortly after the first Super Bowl loss. And so I was living with my parents while I went to Bus State and started doing this. I didn't move out of the house again until probably 94, 95. I don't remember the year now. So being at home, I, you know, knowing my dad was into it. Yeah. Like, I would sit and watch the George Foreman comeback boxing matches with my dad.
Okay. He lost his fight previous to beating Michael Moore for the title, but he was a big name. He lost to Tommy Morrison. Remember Tommy Morrison?
Yes.
So he lost that fight, but he was a big name, so he got to look at a title match with Moore and beat him.
We met Tommy Morrison.
Oh, yeah?
Back when I was working with Kevin Sylvester in the mornings, we did a remote out at a farm store in Orchard Park, Hamburg, you know, somewhere out there. And Tommy Morrison was, I don't know if he was friends with the owners or if it was a promoted thing in-house or whatever, or a contest, but we sat with Tommy Morrison.
12 kids, including five...
Back to Foreman, though.
Back to Foreman, sorry.
Right. Okay, just make trying to keep
I'm still on Foreman. Yep. 12 kids, five of whom are boys and all named George.
Sure.
That's a known thing.
Yes.
Seven daughters. He was on The Masked Singer 2 years ago.
I missed that.
He had some sort of a Disney magic hour thing in his sort of post-retirement life here. Of course, The Grill. Who could leave out The Grill?
The Grills. I mean, there are numerous incarnations of The Grill.
So many.
Yeah.
He sold the rights to that, $138 million. And, yeah, a lot going on. George Foreman. Anyway.
When's the last time? Did you guys have a George Foreman grill at any point?
Never. No.
We did.
Were they great?
This is fine.
Fine?
Yeah.
So that was, like, in your house?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was not kept permanently. It didn't have a spot in the kitchen. I think it was in the basement on a shelf that was easily, hey, you know, I'm going to grill up some chicken quickly. Oh, grab the George Foreman grill. It's healthier.
Yeah, like an air fryer now, maybe.
Sure.
Or
yeah,
a toaster oven.
Yeah. Really, the whole concept was, if you don't remember the George Foreman grill, the whole concept of the George Foreman grill was it's got a top and a bottom, so it's like, you know, panini type machine, and that's more contemporary, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. I just want to make sure the references make sense if I'm trying to guide people who have no idea what a George Foreman grill
is. Paninis are very in.
Okay. Still, wow, that's amazing.
I think they are.
And the whole thing just was slanted forward so that when you put the top down over it and squish the food in it, the fat was supposed to run off into a little tray.
Oh.
That was it.
The picture of health.
Yeah,
George Foreman.
Right. until you know, might have been inclined to do shots of the fat.
Thank you for indulging me on shots of fat.
Shots of the fat.
Thank you for indulging me on my George Foreman rabbit hole
okay.
stuff.
There's no ulterior motive, simply that it's the anniversary of that.
No, I wrote it down to mention it 5:52.
Oh,
but I couldn't get off the page.
Ah, I see.
And then the light went on.
Sure.
And I was on the page. I'm like, this is interesting. There's a lot about this guy.
That'll happen.
That, you know, you might not remember or have ever known.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we will bounce around a little bit today with, that for starters. the Yankee fan guys, who's the worst person in society. Armando Salguero today will join us to talk Bills Dolphins. And I wanted to start with Anthony Richardson.
Okay.
Talking to Ross Tucker yesterday, and he was, am I right? He's pretty much, they had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Matthew Collar Wednesday mornings on Purple Insider for his show, and Matthew, I think, I maybe flatter myself to say this, but I think of he and I as sort of like-minded philosophically. I want the data to prove me right, or else I don't want to do it,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is. And Matthew was like, yeah, they had to do it. I'm like, oh, but his success rate was not as bad, or his efficiency was this was not as bad. What are their incentives? And we got into a long conversation about how it should be. And he's like, look, I'm just kind of spinning Matt a little bit here, but like, look, the best quarterback in the game sat for a year. Aaron Rodgers sat for a length of time, maybe 2 or 3 years. Jordan Love is good. He sat. Brady, even,
sure.
sat for a year. So he wouldn't put it that, like, that just proves it. But it's an Richardson, I'm not looking for a breakdown or to have a long conversation about him, per se.
Mm-hmm.
But just sort of what was the mistake in this? You and I both thought he should have been the first overall pick.
I loved the talent, yeah.
It starts from a place where, and most football people, like scouts and GMs, would not say this about themselves. But I think you would. I know I would. Like, well, we really don't know. So just got to be bold and shoot for upside. And if you...
Yeah.
I feel like I'm sort of taking on the mindset of the person who owns the team. You know, I'm the one who's going to be here the longest. So I want the player who can give me the best chance of winning championships. And that isn't going to be an offensive tackle, right? It's going to have to be a quarterback and give me the guy with the most talent. But maybe I bring this up because it's always easy for me. It's often too easy for me. Just like, well, put him in. Rookie contract. Mm-hmm. Go find out. If he's bad, you move on. Like, it's nothing. But I don't know. Richardson has me kind of wondering and just sort of like tilted a little bit. Not tilted. Just I want to stay humble here about this, you know? Like,
yeah.
Because it's not everybody's the same. And here's a guy who what? How many starts did he have in college? Like just a small number.
How many? Well, it's 13 and 10 are the numbers. It's 13 in college and 10 in the pros, or 10 in college and whatever it is.
It's 10 in
those
pros.
Are the numbers. Yeah.
And this is Lance too.
Yeah.
I think, you know, just hardly ever played, and his career never got started. Third overall pick?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much that we don't know, and so, like, I don't, you know, want to speculate too much about what this guy's problem right now might be. But I honestly think when Ross said it, And when Matthew said it to you in a conversation I wasn't involved in, you know, they had to do it. I really think had to do it is pulling yourself out of the game. I really do.
That's why they had to do it.
That's why they had to do it. I think grown men on a football team would have to be, their minds would be, they're raw. Everybody that's played the sport has said the same. Eric Wood on Monday with me. I've never seen that happen. I've just never seen a quarterback. We've all seen guys turn their ankle or a hamstring or whatever. You know, they get pulled out for concussion, you know, diagnosis, whatever. Quarterbacks do not walk to the side like I need a blow in the middle of a drive. It just does not happen. And this is where, like, that, my walking off point is that is, I said it a few times yesterday, I think the guy is showing you he doesn't really know how football works. And if you are the quarterback of a college team, an NFL team, an XFL team, I don't know, you should know how football works. You should know like a base level concept of what is and isn't acceptable within the structure of the sport. You should never have to ask for that. And so I'm guessing that this is just a public example that we all saw that the organization undeniably couldn't ignore. Like they had to do something because everybody saw it. All the players saw it. And maybe that is just the first time there's been a hint of he doesn't get it. And I don't know, that could be aptitude, that could be intelligence, that could be the playbook, that could be a lot of things. Personality, I mean, who knows? But something's not plugged in there. And I can't keep going there if I'm running that team after something that, and I know it may seem silly, it's one stupid play. You're trying to run a business and a franchise. I just think it's a very bad sign for how that kid's wired. And I would have had no idea about that when we were talking about him as a draft pick.
I think the fact that, and you know, by the way, who knows if it was even something you could have discerned then? I mean, that's
right.
We don't know what it is, and we don't know what the signs were, if there were any signs at all. You know, right? So all of that is very hard to examine. But he got it was like sort of doubling down on the quote mistake by admitting after the game that he just did that. And I almost think that that's like sort of makes me, I don't want to say makes him look better, but what that shows is he just, you know, you're saying this too, he doesn't really know procedure, you know, like
right.
he didn't know, does now, I bet, like that kind of thing isn't done. And especially for a quarterback, you know, a leader, and it's a close game in the second half, mm-hmm. and all these things. And that makes me think more about, again, like the investment these teams make and how well or not well they do at getting the most out of the prospect. And then there's always, too, the sometimes warring factions within the organization, like the differing incentives.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, like I'm thinking like the owner. If the coach is fired in a couple of years, I'll take that chance. You know, I'm in here to win championships, and I'm going to want, and this is a whole other thing, because this is like, well, you're not supposed to be involved in player decisions if you're the owner, because you're not supposed to know anything. And so only the football men can do that, but I don't believe in that. So I own the team. I want Anthony Richardson because I can see glory, you know, and a coach may not, a GM may not, because they're on borrowed time. Like I'm the coach of the team. I don't have time to develop
right.
Anthony Richardson. I've got to win games or else I'm going to be replaced. And so their incentive is different. I feel like now this is ownership, but that doesn't have to be right, because the whole thing about getting taken out or taking himself out really does mean a lot.
Yeah,
equation.
Right.
Probably.
I mean, the coach, like Shane Steichen, this is like any football coach, Sean McDermott, your life is in the game, your life is a sport, you've watched it, you've played it, you're coaching it at the highest level. You're standing on the sidelines of a competitive game at 3:30 or 3 in the afternoon on Sunday, and your quarterback is coming to the sidelines, like, tapping his head. Like, what? Like, what is even happening right now? And so I know it might seem a little silly to make that the turning point or the big flashpoint, but I just think it's optically, I'm guessing it's a small example. Well, it turned out to be a really big one, but it's a singular example of a guy who maybe has multiple times stepped in it around there, and they're all just looking the other way because they're hoping he can lead them somewhere because he's 6'5 and can run through a brick wall and also throw the football through a brick wall. Couple things I think the organization has messed up. Can you remember Josh Allen's developing? Do we want Cam Newton as a backup? No. I don't want someone so good that anyone in the locker room, forget about the fans, that anyone on the team will be looking sideways at the coach going, you know, we got another guy. Like, if Cooper Rush or some your name here, some version of Chase Daniel or something is the backup quarterback in Indianapolis, maybe they don't make this move. But Flacco's become this sort of folk hero figure with what he did in Cleveland last year. And he's always been like a, you know, somewhat polar, is he elite and all that from way back when they won the Super Bowl with Baltimore. It's like, he's too good to be behind a kid who's still on training wheels. So that's something the organization did. And another thing they might have done is not pull him aside after the game and tell, like, someone in media relations, like, hey, dude, just so you know, you're going to get asked about that play where you took yourself out. You might want to say you tweaked something. Like, don't just say you were tired, okay? And, or, you know, maybe it all happens too fast and there's not time for them to huddle up or something, but I think it's possible they just let him twist because they've seen enough of it already. Again, that's wildly speculative, but wouldn't you think someone in media relations could have helped him before he met the media there? And that they, I'm assuming, didn't, might be telling.
I don't know. I want to say again, I think it's easy to say, but that action, you might just need to explain to him why it's bad. Right? Because he doesn't think it's bad if he's doing it and then admitting it.
Right.
So I want to, I like thinking about just like, how bad is it? You know, so it's a bad look and your teammates have never seen anything like it and no one has ever seen anything like it. But one way to put it might be to say, like, well, it's an innocent mistake. I mean, in sports, you do come out when you need a blow. Like, that happens. That running backs do it every game. Right. So, but the quarterback can't.
Right.
And it's also an era where everybody's hyper focused on head injuries. And this guy's been hurt like four times already in his career. And it might make sense. You know, it made sense to him in that moment to think, like, just give me a play. It was third down, I think. And, you know, maybe it could wait. But
yeah,
it's a really interesting one. Like, he's younger than Shedeur Sanders. Richardson.
Right.
You know, he's been in the league for a year and a half now, though. He also, in 10 career starts, has completed more than 10 passes twice.
Right. The stats are stanky.
His first game in the league, he completed 24 passes. I watched that. Pittman was happening. Now they say, like, Pittman and Downs can't happen unless Flacco's on the field. He was happening that day. They lost the game. Then he this year against the Packers, that was a game they were supposed to win too because Jordan Love missed, and 17 for 34, three picks. And now you have, so what happens going forward? The coach today said, like, kind of implied Flacco is staying in.
Yeah, this is not like we're giving him a chance to reset. This is, we think we have a better chance of making the playoffs if Joe Flacco is our quarterback.
This is the Bills' opponent next week. Who would you rather face? This is a fourth down topic for me.
I think it's close.
I would rather face Flacco.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think the upside to Richardson, I think, is obvious. I mean, he could do something that could blow your mind. But it does not happen with any kind of regularity. I don't know that he is seeing where to go with the ball and accuracy. I think I would rather play him and just hope he's not going to make one of the throws that ends up on SportsCenter on me. Whereas Flacco, I feel like, you know, like Flacco rolls out of bed and throws for 335 and three, it feels like to me. And
like Jameis.
Right. I sort of feel like he could do that to the Bills. I'd have a very hard time imagining Richardson putting up a game that, you know, if the Bills are competent at all on offense, that could beat them. Flacco, to me, could. I saw him do it last year.
Yeah.
So, and he's done some of it already this year when he's played. So, I think I would rather play Richardson myself because I don't know that I would want to trust it. I would think McDermott would be able to cook up and Bobby Babich would cook up a bunch of stuff that could have that kid's head spinning.
I know. And I don't have to be. I think I'm in the minority saying that. But I just always want to avoid what's different. You know, like if it's a team like that, you go and play them. And you know, this happened with the Steelers now, too. Like, I'm getting something different and I'm not sure how to prepare for it. And I think with Richardson, somebody as young as that, you'd expect them to improve. And then you show up 1 week and they got it. You know, the matchup's right and they're playing with confidence. Who knows? I mean, you would think now it'll be Flacco next week for the Bills. They also play the Colts this Sunday night at Minnesota. So get ready for Joe Flacco versus Sam Darnold.
Prime Flacco time.
A game that was flexed in. Because we can't watch any more Jacksonville. So they had to pick a game. They had to pick one.
Well,
from the week 9 schedule.
I certainly agree with that.
It's supposed to be Jacksonville at Philadelphia. Yeah. We also can't stand any more New York Jets games, but we have one tomorrow night. Houston at the Jets to kick off literally week 9.
Are the Jets still favored in this game?
By 2. Yeah, I think they're the right side, but of course I would say that, right?
Yeah, you would.
So one question I would have about Richardson, you know, extrapolating it, is next year do teams more often defer to, like, sit the guy and develop him? You know, we want the talent. We'll take the hit on the rookie deal point. We'll give up a year just to avoid. Because what happens this way, and is what's happening here in Carolina, is that it almost feels like there's no possible way the guy will make it.
Because
they've already chosen to pull them, you know, early to mid second season, which is really tough. You're trying to win games, all that stuff. Well, on what terms does he go back in?
Right.
Only when your season's over? I mean, that's not a franchise quarterback.
Yeah. And so are you going to just erase the dry erase board next summer and put him back at the top of the depth chart? Like, and that's when he goes back in. You know, what if Flacco actually leads you to the playoffs? What are you doing? How are people going to get behind that? That's the trick about it. Like, of course, literally, we talked about this with Zach Wilson last year. Literally, you can choose to put him back in. You can choose to have a news conference where you say this is our starting quarterback again, and we think he's learned from his time away. But just good luck getting the he got pulled stink off of him. The teammates are going to feel it. The fan base is going to feel it. And you're just going to have a hard time ever getting back up that hill. That's why I think that what happened with him on Sunday and his explanation for it just slid him so far down. I think it's really hard to get back up.
Will teams be more likely to take their time with rookie quarterbacks after this year? I mean, the guys, he's not a rookie. Some of the rookies this year are doing very well. So I'm not sure this is the perfect moment for that conversation, but it makes you wonder, I think. 803-0550 to join us, just about the Colts, but quarterbacks, how they're handled, how the decision gets made, all that kind of stuff. Really interesting right now. Armando Salguero today, Sal Capaccio as well. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.
Things change there. So I think right now, sitting back and seeing a veteran that's done it at a high level for a long time, you can develop that way as well. McKinsey, you go through that process and learn.
Indianapolis coach Shane Steichen. Joe Flacco goes in for Anthony Richardson Sunday night at Minnesota. The Bills are in Indianapolis next Sunday. 803-0550 to join us. What is the most promising sign about the Bills season so far?
I would say the most promising sign, well, I mean, their record is excellent, 6-2. It's not the best record, but it's a very good record. Their point differential is good. That's also good. I think the most promising sign is what the passing game has looked like the last six quarters or so. I don't know, all of last week maybe doesn't need to be included because they kind of cruised through the end of the game. But back half of the Tennessee game, the start of the Seattle game, I just felt like the offense was flowing through Josh Allen again. And I know I don't expect that to be every week, but with the emphasis on running the ball that is backed up by their choices and certainly how they sound about it, I felt like I don't know if I was gonna say a switch was flipped, because I think we could be in for a run-heavy game any one of these weeks. I mean, if they can run it well against Miami, maybe they'll just run it like crazy against Miami like they did in week two. But I feel like the passing game, since really the Baltimore game, the Houston game, even the Jet game, which they won, I was like, too much of it was just Josh out of structure, running away. Like, the only big plays they got were kind of broken plays. And I feel like the last couple of games here, they look more, it looks more like a proficient NFL passing offense. And I really think they're going to need that in order, I mean, newsflash, I think they're really going to need it later on. Or even to get through this season winning 11 or 12 games. So I think Cooper's arrival coinciding with that might make you want to claim it's all Cooper, like he's drawing coverage or something, and maybe there is some of that happening. I mean, that's a theory that should work. I just feel like their passing game is really encouraging right now. Coleman's emergence, I think, is really promising.
Yeah, Coleman individually might be my answer. I don't know how big a role, though, he plays. I think he plays a role. But with Amari Cooper and all the other things they've done and can do, I don't know that Coleman is like exactly vital to what happens this year, but he's been fine. You know, like, I thought there were, a lot of people did, question marks about the player, but he's been fine. You know, just big plays, and they haven't really needed him to be a lot more productive, which is good because he's a rookie and you shouldn't assume that or expect that. Exactly. I would say also I might pick like the secondary. I think we knew that the corners were good. They've been healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Safety with the turnover, and who knows what the pass rush is. Von Miller, I had no expectations for him going into the season. He also missed four games to his suspension anyway. But if you can't get pressure, then it doesn't matter that you have Josh Allen on your team watching from the sideline. Like, what happens over the top? What happens to your defense, you know, where it really matters? And they've held up. I mean, the Bills' defense has absolutely held up with injuries and with these questions about what they would be. So that's good. I mean, I think I always said, you know, this year and other years about the teams with the best quarterbacks, the floor should be like 500 or even a little better than that. And that is how I felt about the Bills. But if your defense completely falls apart, then that can be wrong. You know, that's one way where it's only so valuable to have a great quarterback, great offense
this year.
A little bit, yeah. Questions about Baltimore in this area too at this point, yep, even though they have a good record. So there are plenty of promising signs. And of course, the division is a part of it. Like, this is really, and this is to me the most surprising thing of all of it. I'm not surprised that the Bills are 6-2. I'm not surprised that the defense is making it. I'm not surprised that, you know, the offense seems fine. I am surprised that they're 4 wins ahead of second place before Halloween.
Yeah.
And that we've already started to have conversations about what to do with that. Like, now you don't do anything, and we'll see if it could go to 5 this week. I mean, the Jets have a tough opponent. The Dolphins come here. The Patriots are the Patriots. It could be 4.5, 5 game lead going into week 10. And I don't know, is there anything you do about that when it's week 10?
I I don't think so.
You're playing for the one seed.
I think you just got to keep going. You know, at some point we'll get to the conversation that we've been sort of, you know, I don't know, just sort of poking with a stick already for more than a week. And it came up yesterday again. Like, you know, when do you consider, you know, what are the stakes? What's the value of, obviously the one is valuable. 2, 3, 4, okay, how do you feel? How strongly do you feel about those? I don't think they're all the same, but, you know, you might be motivated to sit guys down. Just, I guess it depends on how early they clinch, which, again, could be early, maybe reminiscent of 88 when they clinched against the Jets in, that was November, wasn't it?
It was late November.
Yeah.
I will look that up. I was there.
So, you know, but even then, just because you've clinched the division, if the one is still there, if the Chiefs drop a couple and you get them here in a couple of weeks and get them, you beat them, and now you're in a race. And I'm going to have to keep going there, I think. As long as that's realistic, I'm going to have to keep going.
November 20th, 1988. The Bills improved to 11-1 and clinched the AFC East that day. Then they lost 3 out of 4. And they should have been the one seed 10 different ways that year. They went to Cincinnati the next week. They lost to Cincinnati the right. next week. Then they lost to Tampa Bay 10-5.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Yep.
Beat the Raiders. And then that, I mean, sorry, but tragic loss at Indianapolis. The day after Cincinnati won its game to give them hope for the one, that Chip Lowmiller game
mm-hmm.
against Washington. Jamie Morris, overtime, the Bengals win. But still, you know, the Bills are 50-point favorites against the hapless Colts, and they lose that one. So, ends up going to Cincinnati in the AFC Championship. Why did you have to mention all this?
We have a job to do, that's why.
Why did you bring up 1988?
It's all connected. Well, yeah, because that. My recollection was that was a really early clinch, and
yeah.
it was.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And I don't know if anybody's mindset changed, but they did lose.
Yeah, right. I don't remember who played and who didn't or anything like that. I have no idea.
I don't think anything like that happened.
Right.
I mean, they still had a stake the whole way, but all right, let's try to shake that off. Here's Zach with us. Hello.
Hey guys. I guess on the other side of the coin of this discussion here, you know, tell me if I'm being too nitpicky, I guess. I'm still kind of waiting to see like a Kincaid game. You know, I feel like we've already seen, like, a couple Coleman games. Cook's had his own game. Shakir's is always good. Like, and I understand Kincaid is getting in the end zone, and he's scoring a bit, and I'm sure he's doing stuff that I don't see. I'm not reviewing tape every night or anything. But, I don't know. I guess for as much as they kind of touted him as this excellent pass catcher, which he is, I still feel like I'm waiting for, I don't know, like, for lack of a better term, it's like an epic game from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would kind of catapult him into the top tight ends in the league. Like, I would not put him anywhere near like a Kelce or even like, you know, you look at it, and Isaiah Likely has even had his own game at this point, and he's only been around for, did he just get drafted this year or last year? But I don't know. Again, I think I'd be nitpicky, but I'd like to see a little more out of Kincaid. And I guess, yeah.
Okay, thanks. I mean, I've said the same thing many times. I talked about this last week with JSN on the Seattle side, and both guys for first round picks drafted near each other. You know, where's the pop? Like, there really hasn't been much of a pop yet. But I think at this point, this is what you say when they're winning, I guess. But I think at this point, it's what it is. It doesn't revolve. And this is probably, not even probably, this is how it really should be. But it's not revolving around his draft status. You know, there's not this forced attempt to justify picking a second tight end with your first round pick last year, which would be dysfunctional. I always think on some level, you know, if there's synergy in the organization, that's where you'd like for it to end up and not have it look like, well, geez, what did you have to do that? Mm-hmm. Couldn't we have used speed, you know, instead or whatever mm-hmm. we would have yeah. said last year or this year? But the offense is functioning. Knox exists. Knox is still playing a part in their passing game. He's on the field a lot. They want to be more of a running team anyway. He's a part of that. You have other slot receivers. There's only so many snaps where I think you can have Kincaid. And then what's the target share after that? So I agree. It would feel good. But I just think this is, it's kind of working, I would guess. I would think that they would say that.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Kincaid's, you know, game over game here going back into last year. And he, you know, he had, did have 10 receptions and a loss in Cincinnati, 81 yards, so modest for 10 catches. 87 yards against New England in December on New Year's Eve, 84 yards in the clincher against Miami last year. Playoffs were modest. And then you've got this year, and where are we at this year? What's his biggest game this year is 52 yards against Tennessee,
right,
on three catches. So yeah, I mean, it just has not been that game. And I think the caller's right, but it's receiver versus Coleman's had that game already. He's at a 100-yard game. Kincaid doesn't even have a 100-yard game yet, but it's a tight end. I mean, it's not as common certainly for a tight end to have that kind of day, but yeah, I mean,
well, how is Coleman getting there? Like, it's busted plays, you know, that's not his fault. But the Houston touchdown, right, last week, a couple of times, it's just like a broken coverage, and you're getting, I don't know if you have it, but like 40-yard plays, 40 to 50-yard plays from Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just going to be more likely to do that than Kincaid is, don't you think?
Yeah. He's going to be one-on-one on the outside and, yeah, break a tackle and you're out of there. And Kincaid's going to always have to be dealing with more traffic, so the yak is going to be likely different. I like the talent of the player, certainly, but you're not out of line wanting more there at all, I don't think.
57-yard play against Tennessee, I guess only 25 against Seattle, but Coleman has had a 24-yard catch or greater in six games already, 6 out of 8. Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's been very encouraging. So far, that looks like a win. 803-0550, thanks for the call, Zach. Getting connected with the fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Tomorrow is Halloween. Big day around here with the fun team, of which I'm a proud member, putting on the Halloween party. 11:30 to 1. Games, contests. I don't have a costume.
What?
I know.
I'm counting on you to hold this show's end up here.
I appreciate that.
I completely defer to you on this. The other people on the fun team, they don't make eye contact with me anymore. I feel like such a letdown. I feel like a scourge. And you don't have a costume?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Tonight, tomorrow morning, I guess, but
really, good luck.
So I had an idea that I loved for a costume, and I just kept telling myself I would get to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it required buying a suit, and then, which I will never wear a second time.
Uh-huh.
And then
attaching
things to it.
I'm already checked out. Yeah.
And I guess in the back of my mind, I sort of decided I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Right.
I'm just going to come up with a plan B, because I'm not going to buy a suit that I will not wear ever again,
right,
and go through the work of, you know, artsy and craftsy and just all the different ways I was going to dress it up. I wanted to be the question mark guy. Remember the question mark guy?
Sure.
Matthew Lesko.
Yeah, sure.
I got the hair for it, the glasses, I got good shoes. I just don't have the suit. Like, he was sometimes in a white or cream colored suit, then sometimes blue.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to go, buy some felt and cut out question marks and then glue them to this suit. I just decided, no, I love working here. I'm not doing that.
I wouldn't work that hard on a school project that my college life depended on.
Right. So in the back of my mind, I decided I'm not doing the Matthew Lesko idea.
Yeah.
It's an hour and a half at work. It's not mandatory. I think I would be a disappointment if I did not have a costume. And I can't wear the same one. You can't wear the same costume 2 years in a row. That's a rule. That's an unwritten rule.
What did you do last year?
The chicken suit.
The chicken suit? Okay. Yeah, that's right. I should have remembered
I happen
that.
To have a chicken suit.
In my head, it's, you know, Colonel Sanders was so good that is just, that's like, that's, when I think of you in a Halloween costume, that's the costume.
I know. That was good. I could have won awards for that one.
It was really good.
Could have gone out.
Yeah.
And competed.
It's been a while. Almost none of the people that will be at this party tomorrow were working here when you dressed up as Colonel Sanders.
I don't know why I do. I still have that suit.
Right.
But I also wore it. That might have been a Friday. I also wore it out with our friends in East Aurora with the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, open containers and whatnot.
I
spilled dark beer on it.
Oh, boy.
Just in the dark, walking on the sidewalk, people all over the place, and I just sort of stumbled. And I had like a KBS or something.
Oh, no.
And I just, it's not everywhere. I thought maybe the suit was salvageable. And then it's just sort of like everything else in my life, just kind of buried and forgotten.
And you haven't really done anything to know if it's really salvageable.
It would fit. I don't think it's wearable. I'll look. That was really fun though. Like I went to, my daughter was in elementary school. I went to her school as Colonel Sanders. Like that was a head turner. Then I went to KFC. In the drive-thru as Colonel Sanders, because I wanted a bucket to fill out the costume. I wanted the bucket.
Of course.
And they loved me. Like, I got to the window, like, this is unbelievable. Look at this guy. He's Colonel Sanders, you know, at KFC.
Right.
And I just was kind of joking, like, oh, there's got to be free chicken for Colonel Sanders, right? And no, they gave me an apple pie. They did give me a pie.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah, your whole order is free because you have a funny tie on.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah. Yes.
But that was a fun one. Still gets talked about. We have the fun team planning committee stuff. Jill brings up Colonel Sanders. Are you going to do that again?
No. Well, sounds like you got to scramble.
Yeah.
I would too if I cared about any of this, but I'm not. I don't. So well, therefore, I'm not going to scramble. I did get Halloween candy this afternoon before I came in. Still a very good selection at my neighborhood corner drugstore. So I did all right.
I have a small collection of funny hats.
Is one of them that lobster hat you made me wear out at a remote after I lost the picks bet? That
lobster one hat, the big sombrero that Aaron Jones wore, wears sometimes, the exact same hat as that.
Yeah.
Like this jester hat, different colors and like little balls on the ends. That's not a costume. Like
no,
just the guy in the funny hat. It's a hat. That's right. That's not a. It's not something you'd wear on a regular day. It's a Halloween. It's close. It's better than nothing, but it's not a costume.
It's not a costume. It's a stupid hat.
It's just a silly hat.
Yeah. You're not covered there.
Could I dress up in like all of my biggest winter clothes? Scarf, hat, earmuffs, coat, gloves, and just be like cold guy. Is that a costume? Could that be boots? Could that be a costume? That would be funny. Here's a guy sitting at the kitchen table, and he's just completely, it's like he's in a blizzard.
Right. That would be funny for about 45 seconds. Then the climate-controlled setting that we're in would make that completely untenable, and you'd be...
I would lose 5 pounds.
You'd be long underwear guy.
Oh.
Because you just, all the other stuff would be coming off, and all you're going to have left on is like the long underwear, probably.
I'm a skier without the skis. I could come in as, you know, a skier that's off... the slopes and in the lodge.
You are down in it here.
I'll find something.
Yeah.
I promise you that. Armando Salguero coming up next. Bills Dolphins Sunday. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.